On the Bed of This Blue Ocean by Kirk Out. Read by One Lost One. Rating, teen and up audiences. Archive warning, no archive warnings apply. Category, male, male. Fandom, our flag means death. Relationship, Blackbeard, Edward Teach, Steed Bonnet. Characters, Blackbeard, Edward Teach, Steed Bonnet. Additional tags. Post-finale, canon typical violence, heartbreak, angst with a happy ending, temporary character death, breaking up and making up, reconciliation, brief mourning, post-season 1, episode 10. Summary. Ed's made up his mind. If he ever lays eyes on Steed fucking Bonnet again, he's a dead man. Ed's had 6 months of steedlessness, and 6 months of thinking about all the terrible things he'd do to him when they saw each other again. Somehow, it never occurred to him to think that they'd never have the chance. Or, Ed hears about Steed's death and promptly falls apart. Ed's made up his mind. If he ever lays eyes on Steed fucking Bonnet again, he's a dead man. The method changes each time he thinks about it, the options as mercurial as Ed's mood. Sometimes, standing at the bow of the ship and pretending it's the sharp whip of the wind that's making his eyes water and sting, he imagines running Steed through with his sword, making sure to hit all the important bits. But then his eyes will catch on the gouged notch of wood on the mast where Izzy had skewered Steed, and thinks, no. Perhaps he'd run his dagger from ear to ear across Steed's neck, hang him upside down from the figurehead until he was pale and bloodless and a little more than fish food. But then, Ed remembers the stark red line on Steed's neck from the hangman's noose, the lurid bruises in the weeks that followed, the way Steed would wince at the soreness in his throat after reading the crew their bedtime story, and maybe that's not quite it either. Maybe push him overboard, but Lucius's helpless screams and frantic splashes still haunt him in the dead of night. Surrender him to the British? But the tremor in his hands when he remembers Steed, blindfolded and at the mercy of the firing squad. Ed spends his days and nights soaking in the sun and sweat and blood and rum. As much rum as he can handle before his stomach insists it's had enough, and his eyes can't quite keep up with the rest of him until he curls up in Steed's, in his quarters, a silk red robe clutched around his shoulders, the smell of jasmine oil fading from the fibers. He draws coal around his eyes in the morning, etches it along his jaw until his beard has started to properly grow in again, and does his best to look murderous and savage instead of utterly dead inside. Izzy seems happier, at least, which means that Izzy isn't annoying the absolute buggering Christ out of him anymore. The rest of his crew, minus Jim, is back to being as obedient and bloodthirsty as they ever were. Frenchie can't quite meet his eyes most days, which pisses Ed off something rotten, but he's a hard worker and absolutely mental when he wants to be, so Ed keeps him around. If he sometimes lurks around corners, listening to Frenchie, Fang, and Ivan tell the rest of the crew stories about Captain Bonnet, well, nobody fucking asked, did they? Jim has taken on a new vow of silence in Oluwande's absence, and only breaks it to his Spanish curses. They seem inclined to stab him at any given moment, and honestly, Ed wishes they would. He'd like to feel anything except this fucking heartache, even the hot slide of metal in his guts. Ed passes the days, pointedly not thinking about Steed, or thinking about Steed, but only so he can come up with imaginative ways to kill him that are discarded by the time he slips into a drunken sleep. Before he knows it, it's been nearly 6 months since he waited all night at the dock like some kind of dickless moron who thought that someone might choose him for once. He's had 6 months of steedlessness, and 6 months of thinking about all the terrible things he'd do to him when they saw each other again. Somehow, it never occurred to him to think that they'd never have the chance. They're about 2 days' sail off the coast in Barbados when they spot an opulent ship in the water, as decorative and brightly painted as the Revenge once found herself, before proper pirates got a hold of her. The ship has weapons, but apparently no intention of using them, if the white flag it hoists up almost as soon as Fang has fired off a warning shot is any indication. Ed sees Ivan and Frenchie exchange a shrug out of the corner of his eye, but then Izzy fills his peripheral with a bloodthirsty, manic glint in his smile, practically rubbing his hands together in anticipation as he barks orders to the crew. Every now and then, his eyes flick towards Ed for vindication? Approval? Ed doesn't fucking know, just finds it irritating. Exhaustion sweeps over him suddenly, and he just really doesn't want to deal with any of this at the moment. He tilts toward Izzy without looking at him, says, "You take the lead on this one, Iz," like he's trusting Izzy with an important task, and not at all like he just desperately would rather crawl inside a bottle of liquor and sit in an empty room. He must manage it, because Izzy puffs up and immediately starts shouting orders as Ed strides away, careful to keep his gait loose and swaggering. He drudges through the innards of the ship, listening to the creak and scrape of the crew getting ready for a raid, muffled shouts fading the deeper Ed goes. He settles for sharpening his dagger, the sing of whetstone or steel echoing in the cavernous former library. He tries not to think about a time when there were hundreds of books around that swallowed the noise or the sound they made when they were chucked overboard. He sits on the bench by the window and hones the metal and tries to imagine sticking it into Steed's heart without feeling sick. He's not sure how long he sits there, losing time to the monotony of his task, but it's long enough that the sun has shifted substantially in the sky, light streaming through the windows, straight onto that stupid fucking lighthouse painting. Ed's in the middle of glaring at it furiously, debating whether or not to slash it with his now fiercely sharpened dagger, when there's a knock on the door. "Come in," he snaps, and sheaths his dagger with careful hands, glancing quickly at his own reflection to check whether or not he's left tear tracks in the coal again. He quickly drapes himself across the bench, one knee bent and an arm perched atop, aiming for the cold, aloof, violent captain everyone wants him to be. Frenchie shuffles in, gaze pointed towards the floor. It's nothing unusual. Like he said, Frenchie doesn't look at him much these days. But the unhappy twist to his mouth and the quiet sniffle he makes before he talks very much are. "Mr. Hands insists you go up to the deck, Captain Blackbeard, sir," Frenchie says, and wipes at his nose with one tattered sleeve. "Says he..." He clears his throat and actually flicks his eyes to Ed for the first time in days. Some terrible intuition makes for a cold sinking in Ed's gut when he realizes that Frenchie's eyes are red-rimmed and watery, like he's been very deeply upset by something. "Says he got a present for you, sir." All right," Ed stammers, his cool facade cracking as a thread of panic makes his heart start pumping faster. Frenchie gives him a single sharp nod and then turns on his heel, striding out of the room with another series of loud sniffles. Left alone again, there's no one to see, Ed wipes sweaty palms against the leather of his pants, an uneasy feeling in his gut that for once has nothing to do with the amount of rum he's had so far. He gives it another few minutes, can't let it seem like he's at Izzy's beck and fucking call, and uses the time to think about murderous things, practicing his indifferent sneer on the polished silver on the wall. After one final swipe at the coal across his face, smearing it and making him look fractionally more deranged, he swaggers out of Steed's, his quarters, and up onto the deck. He keeps his footsteps heavy as he approaches the sad lot that Izzy and the crew have rounded up, striding slowly and buckles jangling menacingly as he comes upon them. To their credit, most of the men on board look appropriately pants-shittingly scared, but there's a large and soft-looking fellow who's staring at Ed with a mix of fear and fascination that's achingly familiar. It makes him furious. "The fuck are you looking at, eh?" he snaps, stepping close and looking up into the man's face, relishing the way he cowers back and averts his gaze. Ed turns his gaze on Izzy. "Why the fuck did you drag me up here, Iz?" It's only when he looks at Izzy that Ed realizes the other man is practically vibrating with happiness and seems to be actively holding back a grin. When he speaks, he's nearly snorting with glee. It makes Ed lean back to avoid being sprayed with spittle. "This one had some very interesting news to share with us, Captain," he simpers, gesturing to the gentle-looking giant who's flitching away from Ed as much as his bindings will allow. "News from the mainland. Isn't that right?" The man nods twice, once at Izzy, once at Ed, and gives an audible, dry-sounding swallow before opening his mouth to speak. It's an honor to meet you, Mr. Captain. Captain Blackbeard, sir. I'm, Jeff. Jeff Fettering. I'm to understand we've had a mutual friend?" The man gives a nervous flash of a smile, eyes flickering to Ed and away again, when he's continued to be met with a seriously unimpressed glare. I was saying to, he gestures toward Izzy with his bound hands, that it was a real shame what happened to him, sir. A real tragedy. Ed inhales through his nose, deep and long, and continues to stare up unblinkingly. It makes this Jeffrey Fettering squirm. I don't have friends, he says finally, tone low and dangerous. I don't know what the fuck you're talking about, mate. Inexplicably, that's what makes the man look at Ed Foley, and his face collapses in an odd mash of fear and disappointment. He said he knew you, he said weakly. That you sailed together for a while. He said he called you lovely, so I thought you and he were friends. That makes Ed blink, interrupting his intimidating stare. He doesn't know anyone who would ever describe him as lovely, except for... Encouraged by the small reaction, the man hastens to continue. He actually inspired me to join up on a ship, he says quickly. We all admired him so much, the way Steed just went for it, you know? Gave it all up for adventure. Steed. You said... Ed interrupts, speaking slowly and breathing deep between words, trying to calm this terrible dread climbing in his throat like bile. A cold feeling drips down his spine. A real shame. A real tragedy. What happened to him? Izzy leans close, snickering. This is the best part, he rasps, sounding like he's just single-handedly been given the greatest treasure any pirate could come across. Tell him, he orders Jeffrey Fettering. And when the man hesitates, Izzy unsheaths his own dagger and presses the tip of it into the soft line of the man's jaw. Fucking tell him what you told me! He's dead, Jeffrey chokes, holding his head as far away from the point of Izzy's blade as he can. Steed Bonnet, he's dead. Izzy hisses in satisfaction, and behind him, Frenchie lets out a small, sad noise. The world tilts around Ed in a way that has nothing to do with the rocking of the ocean. He feels bloodless and cold. The stupid fuck is lying. He has to be. Run over by a carriage. Izzy cackles as the roar starts to build in Ed's ears. And then, crushed by a fucking piano. The soggy twat. Izzy's laughter is joyful and bright. Ed's gonna fucking kill him. He's actually gonna slit his fucking throat. The stupid prick was useless to the end. Deep breaths are doing nothing to settle the white-hot, furious grief that's flooding him, making his blood boil. His hand trembles at his hip, hovering over the handle of his dagger. He doesn't know who he wants to use it on. Jeffrey, for this fucking shit lie he's told, or Izzy, for acting like it's Christmas come early. You're a fucking liar, he spits and turns on his heel. Throw him all overboard. I don't give a fuck. No! Jeffrey squawks, jolting like he would take a step forward if it wasn't for the continued press of Izzy's blade. I was there. I saw it. He was my friend. We knew each other from grade school. He was so bloody nice. It was such a shame. His head was all pulpy and smashed. Izzy lets out another happy snicker. Ed feels sick. When was this? He demands, hands clenched into fists at his sides. He can feel them shaking and hooks them into his belt instead, grips tightly to stop the obvious trembling. Five and a half months ago? There's a high yelp behind him, like Izzy's getting Jeffrey and his dagger well acquainted. He wasn't in town long, only a week, and then he was dead, I swear. It's not true. It can't be true. Ed would know if Steed were dead, furious and bloody, though he may be towards the other man for his abandonment. Ed would know. But maybe he wouldn't, because this tall bastard is standing in front of him claiming to be an eyewitness to the death of the man he loves. Steed. Dead. Ed keeps his back to the lot of them and doesn't give an inch. We loot their ship already? He asks shortly, not caring who answers. There's a murmur of assent, some grumblings about goods one person snatched from beneath someone else's nose, and Ivan muttering about gold teeth. Great. Send him back to it. I don't fucking care. He stalks away, a clamor building behind him as the crew starts to hustle their victims off the deck and back towards the dinghy they'd been brought on. A soft padding of footsteps sounds behind him and makes him pause. Someone has followed him. Ed stands in the doorway to the lower decks, hands braced on the frame so tight he can hear the wood creak, and turns his head over his shoulder enough to meet Jim's quiet, furious gaze. "What?" he sneers, but the effect is lost in the crack of his voice. Bonnet was fucking useless, Jim says, squaring up to Ed in a manner few have ever dared, and from which none have ever come away unscathed. "A shit captain and a shit pirate. Pissed me off endlessly, all the time." "But he was a good man," they hiss. "And now he's dead, and you don't give a fuck." They spit at Ed's feet with a bitten-off Spanish curse, fire in their eyes, and deadly daggers on their belt. Ed trains his eyes on the nasty globule of saliva staining the deck. "Get the fuck out of my sight," he whispers. The wood of the doorframe groans ominously beneath his hands. "Or I'll hang you from the mast by your own fucking innards." Jim scoffs but retreats, and when Ed steps through the door and closes it behind him, he is utterly alone. Ed spends the next few weeks drenched in anger, grief, and rum. Mostly rum. He's a fucking mess on raids, more drunk than helpful, and reeking of piss and puke. Whatever good mood Izzy had garnered from finding out about Steed's death has quickly faded back into frustration and disdain when he finds Ed on the deck of the naval ship, absolutely hammered, and pissing on a British officer like he's Calico Jack. It earns him a scolding when they're back on the Revenge that only comes to an end because Ed backs Izzy up against the wall, one hand tight on his throat, and promptly vomits all down Izzy's front. It makes the other man squawk and shriek in outrage and disgust, but it gets him out of Steed's quarters, and that's all that Ed cares about. He stumbles to the bookshelf and yanks on the lever for the secret door, stumbling through the entryway when it creaks open. Steed's auxiliary wardrobe is something that he's never been able to purge himself of, not even in his deepest moments of heartache and hatred. Ed trails his fingers along the fine ivory fabric of Steed's summer linens, leaving small streaks of dirt and coal in their wake. Just another way he sullied something beautiful. He fingers the frill of one sleeve, tracing the lace with the pad of his thumb. His lip trembles, his vision swims. Ed trails his hand up the sleeve, pulls the shirt off the hanger and holds it carefully, delicately. Even so, he leaves more marks behind, more scorch marks signifying Ed's ruinous touch. Unable to stop himself, he lifts the shirt to his face, presses his nose to the fabric, and inhales deeply, chasing the last vestiges of Steed's scent that still cling there. Jasmine oil, lavender soap, sweat, and sea air, and something so distinctly Steed that Ed, for all his travels and all the worldliness a life of piracy provided, has never been able to name. He only knows he's collapsed when pain radiates from his knees, where they've struck the floor. Ed folds over, forehead pressed to his knees, catching whiffs of the fading scent in between the racking sobs. He hasn't let himself cry like this since that day, months ago, when he first sat in Steed's barren rooms, every visible bit of him gone save for that stupid fucking lighthouse. All those wasted fucking months, imagining ways to try and kill Steed, to punish him for making him into a fucking fool by that dinghy. All of it for nothing, 'cause the bloody bastard went and got himself killed. How dare he do this to Blackbeard, the world's most fearsome pirate? How could he do it to Ed, who was willing to give up every fucking thing he knew and worked his entire life for, just for the scant chance at happiness with Steed? Had the idea of being bound to him really been so awful? Had the Kraken been too much, more monster than man that Steed could handle? Fuck. Fuck! He thought he'd known heartbreak, sitting alone and watching the sun come up over the horizon. But this is worse than any stab wound or gunshot. This is an infection deep within his heart, his soul, and the only relief was long dead and hundreds of miles away. Ed shudders where he's perched, and when he presses Steed's shirt to his face once again, he swears the scent has faded even further. On the left side, right above the breast pocket, coal is smeared in the creases where Ed has held it to his face and sobbed. His vision swims, the exhaustion and the alcohol catching up to him at the same time. And in the blur of it all, he swears he sees the Kraken's tentacles, undulating in the stream. Izzy tolerates his intoxicated morning for a few days longer, and then has the fucking audacity to throw a pail of water on top of Ed while he sleeps off his latest binge. Ed comes up sputtering and murderous, gun drawn from beneath his pillow and cocked at Izzy's head. "What the fuck do you think you're doing?" he slurs. "Oh well, not entirely sober yet, then." "What the fuck are you doing?" Izzy snaps, and takes one hobbled step forward, off balance from his missing toe. "Fucking disgrace. I could have sworn I promised fealty to the loathsome Blackbeard, not his fucking agony aunt." "Hey, fuck you, man," Ed grumbles, squinting one eye shut so he can aim better at Izzy. Both of them. All three of them? Christ, he might actually have to sober up a bit before he fires a gun. His foot knocks into two of the empty bottles at the bottom of the bed, and they clank together loudly, like they're proving a point. "Fuck you," Izzy retorts, stepping closer, heedless of Ed's cocked and loaded pistol. Which is fair enough, he supposes, considering the room won't stop spinning long enough for him to get a good aim on the thing. "I knew you were soft on the idiot, but this is fucking embarrassing." "You never liked him anyway," Ed snaps, and abandoned his gun in favor of wringing his hand around the neck of a mostly empty bottle, pulling it to his lips. It smacked out of his grasp half a second later, clattering on the floor with a splatter of rum. "I was going to drink that!" Izzy ignores him in favor of leaning close, looming unpleasantly above Ed and making him wish he hadn't put down his gun. "Steed Bonnet was a fucking moron," Izzy declares, not for the first time. It's becoming quite the tired refrain. "He took the most dangerous pirate in the world and turned him into a silly, sloppy pussycat." Izzy's nose ticks up in a sneer, and his hand lands heavily on Ed's shoulder. "The best thing he ever did was die." The rage is sobering. In a movement far more coordinated than it should be, Ed knocks Izzy's hand from his shoulder and wrenches it back as he stands in one quick, fluid motion. He leans over his first mate, while the other man gasps in pain, delicate bones grinding together in Ed's tight grasp, but quiets down when he finds the furiously sharp point of Ed's dagger pressed into the soft underside of his chin. "If you ever," Ed whispers, and lets the knife slide into the skin just enough that a thin stream of blood winds down Izzy's neck. "Talk about him like that again, I'll cut your fucking tongue out and shove it up your arsehole." He tightens his grip, and Izzy gags, something in his arm popping audibly. "If you ever address me like that again, the next body part I make you eat will be your balls." He twists the dagger, draws a thin bloody line to the edge of Izzy's jaw. "Do we understand each other? "Yes, Blackbeard," Izzy gasps, starting to nod but thinking better of it when he remembers the deadly weapon pressed against his neck. Under all the pain, and the healthy sprinkling of fear, a look of delight pulls at his mouth and brightens his expression. "Aye, Captain," he murmurs, and Ed releases him, abruptly sick of the sight of him. "Good," he snaps and sheaths his dagger. "Get the fuck out of here." Izzy touches reverently at the stream of blood on his neck, soaking into the black fabric of his collar. "Aye, Captain," he says again, sotto, and finally does as he's told. The second the door closes behind him, Ed's knees buckle and he collapses to the bed, careful to mind the gun. Empty bottles rattle around behind him. The worst part is, Izzy's right. Okay, maybe the worst part is how he's pretty sure he's going to vomit in the next minute. But the second worst part is that Izzy's right. God, he hates it when Izzy's right. He's always so fucking insufferable about it. He's going to have to cut off another one of his toes just to keep the arsehole humble. Ed peels himself slowly out of the filthy clothing, having slowly been fermenting in the same outfit for weeks now, and even he has to admit the outfit could do with an airing out. He leaves the clothes in a pile by the door for Frenchie to collect, and wiggles his way into his spare pair of leather trousers. He slips into Steed's closet without much thought, but still pauses in the doorway at the hint of jasmine oil that lingers over the threshold. He finds the shirt he's looking for without trouble. He has the contents of this closet memorized by now, and there's only one black linen shirt tucked in amongst the ostentatious clothing that Steed always preferred. It's wildly plain by Steed's standards, but still frillier and fancier than anything Ed would have ever picked out for himself, silver threading intricately stitched on the seams. Still, it's comfortable and clean and smells distinctly unpissy, so Ed slips it over his head. The shirt is flowy and breathable, a nice change of pace from the hot confines of his leather coat and grubby cotton undershirt. The shoulders don't fit him quite right. Steed had been slightly more broad-shouldered than him, even if Ed had more muscle, and it makes the neck drape openly across his collarbones. He runs his finger over the ruffled, flouncy collar and brings it to his nose, inhales deep. After a day or two of wear, the shirt won't smell like Steed anymore, just Ed, gunpowder and sweat and salted sea air. But he'll wear it as long as he can until the fabric thins and falls apart, and then he'll find a way to make Frenchie sew it into something new, so he can keep it with him till he meets his end. It'll be a comfort, he thinks, and straps his holsters over his hips and slides his gun and dagger home, to die with something equal parts him and Steed. Maybe he's not the Blackbeard he used to be, nor the vicious Kraken born of heartache. But he could be something new. Maybe just Ed Teach, a danger in his own right. After all, there was something to be said about the wild cruelty of a man swathed in grief. He makes to leave the confines of the closets when a bright glint of yellow metal catches his eye. A ring of gold sits on a shelf, partially tucked behind a pair of Steed's ugly, impractical shoes, like it had been hastily shoved there. Ed's nails look particularly filthy when he picks it up and turns it around in his fingers, tracing the thick band and the square of onyx in the center. When he turns the ring upside down, his breath catches. On the underside of the stone, there's a name hand-etched badly into the gold. Ed. He's never seen this ring before, which means that Steed must have... A memory flits across his mind's eye, Steed haggling poorly with a merchant at a port while Ed leaned against the wall, bored and surveying the crowd for anyone he might be able to pickpocket as a laugh. He'd never seen what Steed had come away with, just seen the proud flush in the other man's cheeks when the vendor had grudgingly yielded to their bartering, his goods tucked away in a breast pocket. Never seen it until now. Grief twists its dagger in his heart anew, and Ed screws up his face and shoves the feeling down. Izzy's right. He can't keep stewing in his own shit like this. His crew depends on him, and he could probably do with not drinking for a day or two. He's getting tired of the constant dizziness. Maybe Steed had had a point about channeling feelings into a new outlet. Maybe, if Ed can get a handle on the black despair and anger he's felt these last few months, he can turn himself into a nightmare the rest of the world thinks him to be. Still, even as he goes to leave the secretive hutch, he shoves the ring onto the fourth finger of his left hand and tries not to think too hard about the fact that it fits perfectly, chosen for him with care. He makes an effort after that. Not much of one, because Blackbeard can't be seen as being a tryhard. He's supposed to be effortless and cool, always 10 steps ahead. It's actually embarrassingly easy. Most pirates, if he's being honest, are fucking idiots. And Ed's not managed to live this long by not being smarter than everyone else. Even Izzy, as adept as he is at the task he's been given, is easy to predict, easy to cut off at the pass before he turns into a conniving little twit again. Ed gives orders, goes on raids, does a fair bit of maiming himself. It's actually very grounding to cut the ears off a Spanish naval officer, or use the sharp point of his dagger to trace a ragged BB into the chest of a particularly irritating merchant sailor. There's something to be said about the comfort of old habit. He develops a new habit, too. It starts with the merchant sailor's boat, Ed wandering around the captain's quarters while Ivan pulls out the blood-soaked man's golden teeth, Fang holding his jaw open through the screams. There's a small shelf built into the wall behind the captain's desk, and on it are half a dozen books. The sight of them causes a familiar wrenching in Ed's guts when he gets to thinking about all of Steed's beloved books, long since dissolved in the salty ocean water. Without much thought, he reaches forward and pulls down a book with a dark green binding and an etching of some sort of plant on the cover. He flicks through the pages and finds more drawings and diagrams of flowers, trees, and fruits. Steed used to have a book like this. Said it was to make sure he didn't accidentally ingest anything poisonous should they find themselves landbound at any point and needed to scavenge for food. He'd been so proud of it. and it had been one of the first books Ed had tossed overboard. He snaps the book in his hands and shuts and tucks it under his arm, then grabs the others and hefts them into a sack. "I'm taking these," he says shortly, and after a moment's consideration also grabs the ornate painted vase that the books had been leaning against. "This too." The man doesn't have anything to say about it. He's passed out for blood loss, Ivan still rooting around in his gaped open mouth. Ed takes his spoils back to the Revenge, and when he places the books and vase carefully on one of the dozens of barren shelves, the room feels immediately less abysmally lonely. He steals books from every ship they come across, and isn't as discriminatory about them as Steed would have been. He's just trying to fill the empty spaces, so as long as the bindings are in half-decent condition, they wind up in Ed's rooms. It's not just books, though. Paperweights, vases, silver candlesticks, and delicate porcelain tea sets all find their way onto the shelves, bringing a splash of color and fancy. Jeweled cufflinks, heavy gem necklaces, and weapons that are more decorative than useful. A cache of decadently scented bath oils, herbal and floral, and nothing Ed would have ever chosen for himself before Steed. An extravagantly carved desk that takes the better part of a day for the crew to move from the ship they've raided and into Ed's quarters, but that he damn well wasn't going to leave without when he discovered a switch beneath the top that opened up a secret drawer. Steed had taught him to appreciate fine things, and even though Ed's taste is nowhere near as discerning as the other man's was, if it catches his eye, it comes back with him. He's amassed quite the collection of rings and a few lush cushioned boxes in which to hold them all, but the gold and onyx ring never leaves his fourth finger, nor does he wear any of his new accoutrements on any of the others, saving them instead to use for bartering at CD ports where even his reputation isn't enough to obtain rations for free. Most nights, he finds himself standing on the bow of the ship, leaning against the maidenhead and staring out to sea, twisting the ring around and around until the skin feels sore. He stands there and imagines the way Steed would have stammered his way through giving it to him, had he the chance. The all-consuming anger he's felt towards Steed gradually fades, there being no point in continuing to be furious with a dead man. The hurt and feelings of betrayal linger, mixed in with a newfound sense of regret. Maybe if he hadn't just sat on the dock all night, if he'd gone into the forest to find Steed, he could have talked him out of running away without Ed. Maybe Steed would still be alive. Maybe he would have found another ring to give him in their new life. Maybe. He'll never know. He twists and twists the ring around his finger, gold band polished from his constant ministrations, and as he stares out at the vast swath of ocean, thinking about the blood-red scrap of silk he'd sent out to sea, it occurs to him that he is completely, utterly adrift in his own loneliness, drowning in it, with no hope of rescue. One day, 3 months after he's learned of Steed's death, a ship appears on the horizon. In and of itself, it's not a remarkable occurrence. It's not like they don't see other ships all the time, but the speed with which the other boat is moving towards them is both alarming and entirely intriguing. Blackbeard's infamous flag is hoisted high, so there's no mistaking who's aboard the Revenge, but still, the other vessel speeds to them, wind filling their sails and hastening their approach. Weird. Ed mutters from his spot by the helm, Izzy hovering at his shoulder after having summoned him above deck. He's got a spyglass pressed against his eye, the other one squinted tightly shut, but the ship is still too far away to make out anything except the white flag high on the mast, flapping furiously in the wind. Ed, despite himself, feels entirely intrigued by this odd turn of events. He lowers the spyglass and squints towards the skyline, noting how even without the telescoping lens, the other ship is notably closer already. He lifts the spyglass again and tries to catch a glimpse of whatever crew may be on board, but the bow of the ship is moving up and down so vigorously against the waves that it's hard to keep focus. Very weird. Aye, Izzy drawls entirely too close to Ed's face. He lowers the spyglass once more and gives Izzy a sharp sideways glance, and his first mate steps aside with an acquiescing tilt to his head. That's what I thought, too. Ed becomes aware of a shape in his peripheral vision, and when he turns, he finds Jim standing quietly a foot away, their sharp eyes trained on the ship that's rapidly closing in. What do you make of this, then? He asks, because even though Jim definitely hates him with every fiber of their being, they're sharp as a tack, and Ed can always rely on them for their honest opinion. I have an idea, is all they say, voice as clipped as it ever is, but then they turn on their heel without another word. Ed watches as they stalk forward and grab Frenchie by the arm, hauling him away from the rest of the crew that's gathered on the deck. As the door to the lower deck swings shut behind them, he can just make out the beginnings of a furiously whispered conversation. His eyebrows tick up in interest. He hadn't had much hope for the day when it had begun, but so far, it's turning out to be pretty compelling. "Should I have the men ready the cannons, Captain?" Izzy sibilates his rasping sort of voice. He sounds so excited about the prospect that it makes Ed lean away from him with a grimace. "Nah, man, the fuck is wrong with you?" Ed says, keeping his tone even, bored. Wouldn't be good to give away how keen he is, least of all to the most duplicitous member of his crew. "White flag's up, innit? There's a code, man. We're pirates, not dickheads." He snaps the spyglass shut and whacks Izzy in the chest with it harder than he needs to. He relishes in the uncomfortable grunt it elicits. Might as well see what they want. He makes his way to the mast at the stern of the ship, leans against it on the starboard side and studies his nails, forcing himself to stand casually, even as a heady anticipation thrums in his veins. The gold of his ring is glinting in the sun, looking especially bright under the clear sky, peeking out from the edge of his fingerless gloves. He stands there for maybe half an hour, watching the ripple of the ocean and the occasional crest of a wayward dolphin, before Izzy shouts, short and furious, "Captain, you'd better see this!" Ed pushes himself off the mast with a roll of his eyes skyward, not quite in the mood for his first mate's latest drop. Sure enough, when he rounds the post and catches sight of Izzy's face, it's fixed into a dark and fuming scowl. "Christ, what now?" Ed mutters, but Izzy thrusts the spyglass at him wordlessly, face mottled with bright spots of rage. Ed takes it from him, but not without giving Izzy the kind of look that promises ugly retribution should he ever hand him something like this again, and extends the spyglass with a sharp snap. Nothing could prepare him for what greets him on the other end of his magnifying lens. There, stood against the bow, blonde hair pulled away from his face and wearing as plain of clothes as Ed has ever seen him in, face forelit by the setting sun and adorned with a look of blind, naked hope. Steed. The spyglass tumbles out of Ed's hands and clatters to the deck as his fingers go numb. His chest feels strange, and it takes a moment to realize that it's because it's heaving with rapid and steady breaths, heart beating a furious staccato beneath his ribs. "What the fuck?" he rasps, vision going black at the edges. He's hallucinating. He has to be. Too much rum, maybe, but no, he hasn't touched more than two fingers of the stuff in days. Maybe he hasn't had enough water? Or spent too much time in the sun? Or had some bad dried meat? He'd thought the sampling they'd picked up at the latest port had been a little off. But Izzy is vibrating with a familiar specific anger beside him, the sort of hatred that Ed has only ever seen him direct towards one man. "I knew it was too good to be true," he seethes, fingers clenched around the rail of the ship. "The man is a fucking cockroach." Izzy turns on his heel towards where the rest of the crew is gathered, all of them peering at the other ship with interest. "Fuck it. Cannons at the ready." Blind panic surges up within Ed's chest, and before he's quite aware of what he's doing, he's got Izzy's throat clutched tightly in his left hand, a choking pressure against his windpipe. Izzy scrabbles against his hand, but Ed's grip is unrelenting, furious. "Don't you fucking dare!" He roars to his men, even though none of them have made a move to obey Izzy's order. His first mate's face is pallid, tinged purple, eyes bulging at the lack of air. Fang and Ivan, the closest to him, share an unnerved glance. The door to the lower deck slams open suddenly, drawing all of their attention towards it, as Jim and Frenchie stumble out, a third dragged behind him. "Lucius?" Fang says, sounding incredulous and relieved, and a little tearful. "You're alive!" Ed's grip on Izzy slackens in surprise, and the other man drops to the floor with a loud thump and a pained gasp of air. Ed ignores him, even as Izzy reaches for his leg, pleading. Lucius looks fucking awful, frankly, thinner than Ed's ever seen him and sickly pale from a lack of sun. It makes the furious expression on his face that much more deranged. Christ, but Ed's glad to see him. The feeling is definitely not mutual, though, because the look that Lucius levels at him is shot through with an abject hatred. No thanks to your arsehole captain, he snaps, his voice rasping and thin, as if from disuse. Fucker threw me overboard! I'd be dead if someone hadn't left the ladder tossed over the side. I've been hiding in Captain Bonnet's stupid little passageways for months, living off scraps of food and vermin! Frenchie catches him around the waist when Lucius attempts a furious step forward, and his knees buckle beneath him. I'd kill you if I had the energy, he seethes. And even though Ed doesn't believe him capable of it in the slightest, he's deeply impressed by the sincerity of the threat. All of them turn back to face the other ship at the sound of the loud splash, the familiar kind that comes from a body hitting the water. Ed's gaze sweeps over the bow, down to the lapping crystalline waves, and can't believe his fucking eyes when he sees Steed's figure cutting through the space between their ships with broad strokes. It jars Ed into action, and he shouts, "Toss the ladder over, fuck!" and braces himself against the rail, leaning over the edge as far as he can without tumbling over himself. His crew, minus Izzy, who's still gagging and prostrate at Ed's feet, hastens to comply, and not 10 seconds later there's the clatter of wood on wood as the ladder unfurls and dips into the sea. Ed's mind is a riot of emotions as he watches Steed swim close enough that his hands find purchase on the ropes, sopping wet body graciously hauled upwards, his face turned towards Ed with that stupid fucking look of hope, before he turns his gaze upward towards the climb. Ed realizes distantly that he's trembling, head to foot, and tries to get himself under control as he strides to the section of the port side rail where the ladder is draped. It takes maybe 2 minutes for Steed's tired body to wrangle its way up the ladder and over the railing, but to Ed, it feels like an age, like an eternity. It feels like wasting the night away alone on a dock, flinching in anticipation at every rustle of leaves, even as a bitter resignation seeps into his bones. Fang and Ivan help him over the edge, gasping and sodden and gaze fixed unblinkingly on Ed. Steed takes a few deep, heaving breaths before his face breaks out into a broad, gentle smile. "Hello," he says softly, to Ed, and Ed alone. The sound of his voice makes something inside Ed snap. It feels like the last tumultuous thread of sanity he's been holding on to is finally unraveled, unbinding all the rage and hurt he so carefully bundled away. It makes him stride forward with a purpose, cock his fist and plant it straight into the line of Steed's nose. The other man drops to his knees with a shriek of pain and a high-pitched whine, hands cupped in front of his face as blood immediately begins to stream from his nostrils. "Shit!" he warbles, nasal and agonized. "Ed. Ed, please." "My name." Ed cuts him off, towering above him, and shivering with anger, hot and bright, "is Blackbeard." Steed's face collapses in a hurt deeper than the ache radiating from the center of his battered, miserable face. There's a small scar at his temple that wasn't there the last time Ed saw him, soft skin of his jaw cradled in Ed's calloused hand. Ed is so furiously, violently glad that Steed is alive, but his stomach twists unhappily at the sight of him. And so he turns away. He looks down at his crew instead, jaw clenched and daring any of them to look back. Jim's the only one who doesn't flinch away, a look of dark satisfaction pulling the corner of their mouth into a small smirk. Ed actually likes Jim very much, but at that moment, he hates them entirely. With a bitten-off growl, forcing back the miserable tears that he can feel stinging at the corners of his eyes, Ed strides away, shoving forcibly past Jim, Frenchie, and Lucius, as he disappears below deck. As he rounds the corner of one corridor, stalking into the depths, he hears Steed call his name again, pleading and thick with tears. He doesn't turn back. Unsurprisingly, his self-imposed solitude doesn't last longer than a few hours. What is unexpected is that it's Oluwande who comes knocking. Ed has been expecting, dreading, Steed to come and find him. So, when Olu's tentative greeting comes from the doorway, knuckles rapping gently against the wood, Ed's surprised enough to let him in. Oluwande steps into the room and pauses to look around, eyebrows raised as he considers the differences between it now and the last time he must have seen it. "Done a bit of redecorating?" he inquires, tone careful and light. Ed grunts in assent, perched broodingly in the bed nook. Oluwande takes a few steps closer, brushes his fingers against one of the glass trinkets Ed has perched on a small buffet table. "It's nice," he says in that neutral, genial way of his. "Different, but nice." Ed's always liked Oluwande, but right now he would really like him to fuck off. And so he says, "Fuck off," and goes back to looking out the window, face twisted into a scowl. He hears Olu heave a sigh from behind him, then the rustle and creak of a body settling into a settee Ed has pilfered from a Frenchman's luxury ship. A long moment of silence stretches between them, somewhat tense, but not uncomfortable. "You know," Oluwande says eventually, conversational and kind in a way Ed really doesn't deserve. "At first I was pissed, when you left us stranded on that island. I still am, if I'm being honest, but Steed found us after a day, rowed us one by one to the nearest port, told us everything." A pointed pause. "Everything." And I thought, yeah. That all makes a bit more sense now. Ed looks at him then, still scowling. Olu doesn't react beyond scratching at his beard, face open with sympathy, eyes kind. Ed stays explicitly silent, but Oluwande simply seems to take this as his cue to continue talking. "I won't tell you to forgive him for what he did," Olu says. "Just like I won't tell Jim to forgive you for what you did to all of us. They really, really want to stab you, by the way, but I think I've managed to convince them that it wouldn't be a good idea. But Captain Bonnet, he knows what he did wasn't right. He knows he hurt you." "He didn't hurt me," Ed snaps, lurching out of his seat and standing, fists clenched at his sides and body poised for a fight. "Nobody fucking hurts me." Oluwande, braver than anyone ever gives him credit for, levels Ed with a deeply unimpressed look. "Yeah," he drawls. "Is that why you tried to kill Lucius and marooned us on the smallest fucking island around? 'Cause you weren't heartbroken?" He slaps his knees with both hands and heaves himself onto his feet, hands tucked into the rope belt cinched around his waist. "Look, man, I don't fancy myself getting stabbed, so I'll just say what I came here to say." Olu takes a breath, braces himself, then says, "The two of you are the biggest idiots I have ever met, and you've seen the crew I run with. Bonnet adores you, man. I'm pretty sure he broke his own heart just as much as yours when he did what he did. But the stupid bastard found us in a dinghy, and he's been chasing you for months just for the chance to say he's sorry." Oluwande shrugs and turns away to leave the room. "You don't have to forgive him, but maybe hear him out without trying to break his nose again. In the meantime, I'll try and keep Black Pete and Jim from trying to kill you, but you know," he shrugs again, "you might deserve it." And then, like he didn't just finish chastising the most dangerous pirate on the seven seas, Oluwande leaves the room with a small wave goodbye and strides off into the corridor. Ed's very calm response is to heave a glass vase across the room, breathing heavily as it shatters against the wall. Anyone else, he'd hunt them down and make them ingest a piece of their own body for daring to speak to him like that. But the events of the day have him feeling out of sorts, and Oluwande has always been respectful towards him, even in his chiding. He doesn't particularly want to incur Jim's wrath either, so he supposes Olu can keep all of his appendages attacked. He's still standing there, chest heaving, when another figure steps nervously into the entrance of his rooms. Even without turning to face them, Ed knows exactly who it is, nerve endings lighting up at Steed's proximity. He keeps his gaze fixed on the wall, upper lip twitching into a half snarl. He hears Steed take a shuddering breath that lets out an equally tremulous exhale. "Ed," he says, voice cracking on the single syllable. "Edward, I'm sorry. My God, I'm so sorry." "Don't." Ed bites, head snapping towards him, careful to keep his gaze trained on the uncharacteristically scuffed toes of Steed's boots. Unfortunately, this means he's fully aware of the moment Steed takes a tentative step into the room. Ed steps away in turn, and Steed halts his approach. He hears Steed swallow. "You have to know," Steed says, tone frayed and on the verge of begging. "I regret leaving you there more than I regret anything else I've ever done, and I will for the rest of my life." "Why'd you do it then?" Ed sneers, still not looking up from the area around Steed's knees, even as his vision blurs dangerously. "Realized a life with a monster wasn't good enough for you, eh? Is that it?"
"No!"
Steed bursts, taking another desperate few steps forward. Ed stiffens but manages not to step away again, even as the other man draws closer.
"No, you mustn't think.
It was nothing to do with you, Ed, I swear. Disbelieving anger is what makes Ed's gaze flick up, past the blood spatters on the collar of Steed's shirt, above the lurid bruising already forming across the bridge of his nose and beneath his eyes. He meets Steed's watery gaze with the murderous glare of his own, and his lips curl back in contempt. Seems to me it was all to do with me, he counters furiously. I gave up everything for you, and you fucking left me there. He exhales a single humorous laugh. Guess it was Blackbeard and not Ed all along. What did it for you? Steed's body deflates with a wet gasp, like a sob that doesn't have quite enough air to come to fruition. It was never Blackbeard, he whispers. It was always you, Ed. He swallows. My Ed. I'm not sure anything. You made sure of that. Steed's expression crumples, gaze finally dropping away. He gives a miserable nod of his head. I should have come to you, he admits, and twists his hands together. The motion draws Ed's gaze, and he notices Steed has dirt ringed around his fingernails and a smattering of bruises over his knuckles. He curls his own fingers into his palms hard enough that his nails would cut into the flesh if he weren't wearing his gloves, fighting down the impulse to grab Steed's hands and ask him what happened to make those marks. But Steed is still talking, and Ed forces himself to pay attention. But I was so shaken, so terribly confused. Badminton woke me up at gunpoint and marched me into the woods to kill me, you see, and he said these awful things about me. Awful, but true, about how I ruined you and the horrible way I treated my wife and children, and I panicked, Ed. And I'll never forgive myself as long as I live for hurting you the way I have, and... Ed blinks, a decent portion of his anger abating in the onslaught of Steed's rambling explanation. Badminton did what? He sees, and even though he's aching with an anger and hurt he thought he'd long since moved past, it's dwarfed by the red-hot fury that rises at the thought of someone threatening Steed's life. Logically, he knows that all of this was months ago, nearly a year, but there's a feral, animal part of him that snarls at the thought that he's only just gotten Steed back after thinking him dead for months, and that he'll kill anyone who tries to take him away again. He resolutely ignores the voice in the back of his mind that reminds him it wasn't so long ago he'd been planning ways to kill the man for himself. Steed forges on like Ed hasn't said anything at all, frantic and babbling. And I know you must hate me, I hate myself, but I... He smiles and sobs at the same time, face ruddy and streaked with blood and tears, brown eyes bright and red-rimmed, resigned. God, Ed, I love you. I needed to let you know how desperately I love you. He's still smiling through his tears, through the pain that Ed knows must be radiating from his nose, looking battered and miserable, but also like Ed is the only thing he's ever wanted to look at in his whole life. Nobody's ever looked at Edward Teach that way before. Not until Steed Bonnet came along with his mad ideas and his piss-poor piracy and knocked him on his arse. I just needed you to know. Steed whispers after a long moment where Ed says nothing and doesn't move a single muscle and goes to leave the room. Stop! Ed barks, and Steed does, gaze whipping back towards him in surprise. Jesus fucking Christ, man! Stop fucking leaving! He demands and crosses the room in 5 large steps. The collar of Steed's shirt is salt roughened under his fingers, filthy with blood and sweat and the wear and tear of weeks at sea. There's a fine layer of blonde stubble around his jaw that Ed's never seen before, and his hair is greasy, long enough that it's held back at the nape of his neck with a thin strap of fabric. Ed twists his fingers into the filthy fabric of Steed's shirt and yanks, crushing their mouths together with a furious exhale of breath. Steed yelps against his mouth, but his hands find Ed's jaw and hold him firmly, tenderly, and he kisses him back with passionate relief. It's in this moment, Steed warm beneath his lips, stubble catching against Ed's beard, and fingers sliding into the hair at the nape of his neck, that the reality of what it all means sinks in. Ed breaks away with a gasp, and Steed chases after him with his lips, finding the corner of his mouth, the apple of his cheekbone. I thought you were fucking dead, he whispers, and traces trembling fingers to the point at Steed's neck, where his pulse is thrumming, fast as can be. Any normal person would be pissing themselves in fear to find Blackbeard's hand at their neck, but Steed leans into his touch with a watery smile. They told me you were fucking dead. It was a fuckery, Steed whispers, and presses another reverent kiss into Ed's mouth. Ed kisses him back. Of course he does, eyes fluttering shut for a brief second. I think you would have been quite proud of it, actually. I'm so fucking pissed at you. Ed tells him, but his hands are a gentle touch at the hinge of Steed's jaw, and there are tears slipping down the slope of his nose that match the ones Steed's been shedding since the second he stepped into the room. I love you. I love you. Don't you ever pull that shit again, or I'll cut your fucking head off. Steed just laughs into his mouth, the fucking lunatic, and manages a, I wouldn't dare, before he's drawing Ed back into his embrace, and they lose time together for a long while. Later, long after the sun has gone down and the room is lit only by candlelight, Steed runs a damp handkerchief across the line of Ed's eyes, wiping away the black smear of the kraken. His ministrations are careful, ever gentle, touching Ed like he can't quite believe he's really there. Ed understands the feeling. There's still anger simmering between them. Anger and regret and an ugly conversation that all needs to be addressed. But now... Now Steed sets the cloth aside when the coal is mostly gone and Ed's eyes slowly open. Ah. Steed whispers, thumbs sweeping against the thin and delicate skin beneath Ed's eyes. There you are. I've missed you so. Ed tilts his face up, their nose skimming against each other, foreheads pressed together. Steed smiles down at him, face full of warmth and love, even through the bruising. The beast inside Ed settles, utterly content, no longer alone. The end. Thank you for listening. Again, I apologize for not doing any accents, but I like you. I mean, I don't know you, but generally speaking, I like you, and I wouldn't want you to have to deal with that kind of pain in your life. Please go ahead and let me know what you think.